are we here? What are we doing? Will whatever is going to happen happen today? Or perhaps next week? An unresolved dilemma. The theater of the absurd is a post-World War II designation for particular plays of absurdist fiction, a favored style of European playwrights in the 1950s. Ionesco, Genet, Adamov, and more recently, Tom Stoppard, Edward Albee, and Pirandello. Northampton Community College Theater Department explores these questions that all beings must work through. Waiting for Godot, by experimental absurdist playwright Samuel Beckett, asks these big questions while defying traditional interpretation. Now, it's usually cast with an all-male actors. NCC's all-female cast attacks our comfortable certainties, much like the play itself. Two dilapidated souls live their lives painstakingly as they can, waiting for Godot, who promises to explain their interminable insignificance. This is WDIY 88.1 Lehigh Valley Public Radio, and you are listening to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host, Kate Scuffle, we chat this day with Chris Egging, director of Northampton County Community College Theater Department's production of Waiting for Godot, and with Sarah Thatcher, who stars as Estragon. Welcome. And I must tell you, I'm going to slip every once in a while into saying Godot, rather than Godot. So we can get into that discussion, Chris. Do you say tomatoes or tomatoes? So you can clarify that for me. And I said Northampton County Community College. It's Northampton Community College. I'm from the old state where it was NACAC instead of NCC. So please forgive me if I do that.
Welcome, both of you. This is not a play necessarily for the faint of heart. How are rehearsals going? What has the journey been like? Sarah?
I think they're going great. we're having a really great time finding the playful moments in this particular play. So
I was going to say, it is a tragicomedy. We tend to think of it as, you know, it's Beckett, it's heavy, it's intellectual, it's dark. There's a darkness to it, but it has its humor, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that just raised something that we hadn't discussed before, Kate, that actually makes me think of the way that a lot of audiences look at the works of Chekhov as well. They think, oh, gosh, this is going to be terrible and boring and nothing ever happens. But really, it's the wordplay. It's because both of those are about the language, and it's the strange, weird things that people do while they're waiting for something that never, ever, ever comes.
True.
That really causes the jokes to happen, and you start to get into a lot of physical things that happen because of the waiting or things of that nature.
And the waiting in Godot, sorry, watch my pronunciation, Godot. It's written post World War II. Not to put too much into that, but it's a worldview for Beckett. The play is very much about a waiting for what? Awaiting a sense of the answers to the questions we're looking for meaning, for why that we're here.
Yeah, a lot of absurdist playwrights are focused on the idea of existentialism, and that we've been placed in this chaotic world where we're constantly searching for an answer from somewhere, from above, that is never going to come. There is no answer. We're never going to find a way out of it. Life is just a mess. And it becomes absolutely absurd as we struggle to make it more than what it is from the journey from when we are born and when we die,
right.
Which all of those playwrights look as such a short, brief moment as it is when you look at the pure distance and length of time and how long the world has been around and how short and brief our moments are while we're here.
Right. Something I had read, it's interesting looking, preparing for today's interview, that really struck me. Tell me if you agree with this, or if this is the human need to make things make sense to ourselves. One critic I read said that the very fact that Vladimir or Didi and Estragon or Gogo keep waiting for Godot and keep believing that somehow Godot will give purpose or explanation or meaning in some ways, despite the fact that there's probably no meaning or explanation or purpose. They're waiting in belief, and it gives them a kind of nobility and lifts them in some way, that the very fact of believing that there must be a reason is a kind of reason.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and Sarah, jump in if you want. But Vladimir actually has a speech towards the end of the play where he is finally fed up with the waiting and jumps at Estragon and says, can we just do something? Like, now that we're here, we've been waiting and we never actually do anything, but now we have the chance. And while this person crying for help is actually the cries of all humanity, and we need to help him, so let's do it. And comes down to the fact of, you know what, maybe we're not going to do it, but at least we've kept our appointment.
Yes.
And so that's the nobility piece. The nobility is in all of this, well, even if nobody's ever showing up, because another question in this is, how long have they been doing this, coming back to this same place day after day? But that the nobility in there is, but we've kept our appointment. We promised we'd be here, and we're holding that up in the idea that hopefully then that will bring the reward that they're waiting for.
Isn't it strange that when we are in our lives today, we're waiting for something, thoughts go through our mind as to, is it going to happen, isn't going to happen, why is it, let's change it. So all of those things are still going on in their minds as well.
And they encounter other people. Sarah, who else do they encounter for our audience that might not know the characters as well as you guys at this point certainly do?
Yes, our lovely Pazzo and Lucky, and of course the boy.
Right. So. And Pazzo and Lucky are who? They have a different relationship than you and your partner.
Yeah, we kind of get the impression that Lucky is the slave of Pazzo. I believe he confirms it at a couple points, but we're still not entirely sure. I think
Lucky is a servant of Pazzo, and
a
without
slave.
Without giving too not a slave. It actually comes, if I don't want to give too much away, but maybe. Maybe Pazzo doesn't want Lucky there and can't get rid of Lucky, but is unwilling to stop letting him serve in that capacity.
Mm-hmm. And what about Vladimir?
Didi. Yeah, Didi is the other half of Estragon, I would say.
And how do they differ from each other? How do they complement and differ? Why are they each other's halves?
I'd say Didi is 100% more the intellectual being. And I kind of like to think of Estragon as the need, like human, I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm, you know, so the levels between the two of them are very different as far as what they want.
In researching the show, I also saw juxtapositions between the idea that Vladimir represents the human mind and consciousness, and Estragon is the body.
Okay.
And the and so one, the mind is able to remember things and work through ideas, but can't move and can't actually follow through with them. And then the other is capable of doing things, but can't remember that yesterday someone beat him up over and that there were chicken bones offered by the other one. I can't remember who they were.
Oh, that's interesting.
And another juxtaposition between the two as far as Vladimir and Estragon is Vladimir is like the straight man. If you look at like a farce or a vaudeville kind of world, Vladimir is the straight man and Estragon is the one that slips on the banana and makes the joke blow up throughout.
Has there been, have you found in rehearsal, I was going to say, sometimes I have an image for this play. Often the two leads are photographed as with almost the Charlie Chaplin-esque look with the bowler caps. And when you're talking about the sense of a vaudeville team, do you find that that comes to play when you're trying to find the life of the play? Or
Oh, absolutely. Actually, with the idea of the characters in a mask, and we've looked at the idea of, we're looking at the fact that we're doing this play with female actors as opposed to male actors. And so, but can't change the words in the play. The play is written as written. And so you're looking at the mask of the person as opposed to maybe the individuality. But I lost my train of thought for a split second.
Well, we've been talking a little bit earlier before we came on that you had said too that you felt that's
that the bowler, right? So the idea of the mask, right? And so and again in absurdism this happens a lot. The style calls for this specific physical characteristic, and physical choices are specific. The bowler hat is automatically called for, and it's actually required for bits that are written into the script. And one thing that Samuel Beckett was very clear on is this is the action of the play. And these stage directions, where a lot of times stage directions in a printed text may be written by a stage manager in rehearsal and wasn't actually included by the playwright, in Beckett's case, that wasn't the case. Those were the directions written in by the playwright, so with the specific idea. Huh. And yes. It, wearing the jacket, wearing the hat, starts to lead a physicality into a certain direction that you wouldn't otherwise see.
Yes, the irrationality of it all. You know, some reviewers said that absurd theater does away with the concepts of drama, chronological plot, logical languages, themes, recognizable things. But I don't think that's true at all in his play.
I mean, there's a plot. There's very well defined characters. Yeah, it's not traditional.
The theme, you're waiting.
Right.
And, but inside of that, it's not like we're used to, especially in our society, a formulaic plot structure.
True.
That is laid out. There's a clear beginning, a clear end, and someone either reaches yeah. or loses their objective.
Yes.
By the end of Waiting for Godot, there is no resolution.
Right.
They're still waiting, and it's this interminable, that idea that that's not the central piece. The characters also don't have a lot of backstory. They vaguely reference who they are and where they came from or things from the past. Mm-hmm. But unlike an Arthur Miller play where you need to fill in the internal workings of the character and the backstory, that stuff's less important in absurdist work, especially Beckett's. It's more about the words that are being said and the specifics of the moment.
Incidentally, in 1969, Beckett won the Nobel Prize in Literature for his works. But I think it was basically based on Waiting for Godot.
Godot, I would think, for the average probably theater goer, would be the best known piece. And early, we were talking before the show as well, it was a success. It was his first commercial, if we want to use that word loosely, success in Europe. Yep. It was a little tougher sell when it first came to the States. Is that so?
Yeah, it was, actually. It came to Miami first, but it was billed as the greatest comedy on two continents. And well, the first look at this absurdist thing of people standing and waiting and just filling empty time didn't leave those audiences in Miami feeling overly, like,
they were entertained.
Exactly right, yeah. Exactly right.
They were entertained.
But then it rebounded when it was remounted in New York and was received very strongly there.
And it was originally written in French. I'd forgotten that he lived most of his life in France, and a lot of the work was originally written in French.
He did. Yeah. He escaped Ireland because left Ireland because he disagreed with the theocracy in Northern Ireland, and so it was very Catholic heavy,
very
and he was not Catholic and was Protestant and felt that, and also the absurdism itself.
Incidentally, there was a ban actually by Beckett to not have females play this role. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. Samuel Beckett died in 1989, and Godot lasted until 1991, when it was lifted by a Dutch judge. The ban was lifted. She noted that the all-female Beckett play would not harm the Beckett legacy or the original intention of the play. And that year, the play was performed by an all-female cast at the prestigious Avignon Theater Festival. And wait a minute, here's another theatrical fact. Edward Albee, who was also, an absurdist in one way, named his famous play, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, after seeing that written on a barroom toilet mirror. Since then, the play has more occasionally been performed by all-female cast in theaters across the globe. We'll be right back after this salient message.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon, WDIY 88.1, and we're chatting with Chris Egging, director of Northampton County Community College Theater Department's production of Waiting for Godot, with Sarah Thatcher, who stars as Estragon.
Sarah, I have a quick question for you. Just given before the break, we were talking about the sense of the mask, an absurdist or this kind of theater, and inhabiting, being inside that costume, that mask, in a sense. And you had said you had just been studying, you'd been in Japan, spending some time studying Japanese theater. Did you, coming out of that experience and coming into rehearsals for Godot, did that influence, or did you find that something, I don't know, interesting to weave into the work or the process?
Yeah, it's been a crazy year. I'm very lucky to have had the opportunity to study under the great Yoshinori Tanakura, who took us over there to study various forms of Japanese theater. And it's interesting to see stylistically the differences. And if anything, the biggest thing that I took from that was the appreciation to the dedication to detail. Mm-hmm. And I think with this play, that's a huge part of what we've crafted into it thus far.
Interesting. So. Because I think people could be, it feels like a fable almost. You know, two tramps, they're waiting, the person doesn't come, two other people wander in, a boy comes in once in a while to announce that Godot may be coming. But it's not simple. And so the detail must be very anchoring, if that's...
It is dependent on it, because so much of what the show is the language of the play, because there's not a lot happening. A lot of it is two people standing around talking. Or not talking for extended periods of time and filling that space. Any detail that's not specific from either the actor's objective or where their focus is or how their hand is positioned can throw the focus away from what's important in the show. And as soon as you lose that, kind of like a farce, as soon as you break that tension with the audience, all the air falls out, and you got to start from the beginning to get them back onto the same page with you again. Yeah. So, yeah, that detail is very important.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been in rehearsal?
Well, we started very early. We had auditions in the end of August, right when school started. And then I also work with Touchstone Theater. So we had a couple weeks of rehearsal. Then I took 3 weeks off while the festival was building up and then running. And it was such an awesome experience in and of itself. But then we dove back in. So we've normal rehearsal time, I would say, for a college production, probably about 8 weeks total before we've opened it up.
And the rest of the cast?
The rest of the cast, yeah, they're fantastic. Vladimir is played by Therese Mosley. She is doing such amazing detailed work and bringing a life to Vladimir. It's been so much fun to watch her work through her process of building the character and bringing it to life. Kira Purcell plays Lucky and is a joy to watch that physical challenge that is the role of Lucky. You'll have to come see the show if you don't know what that means. Dania Beard is great as Pazzo as far as filling in the larger-than-lifeness and the arrogance that is so dependent on everyone loving him and whether he is being liked and praised for what he's doing. And how that gets in his way and stops him. She's doing a great job with that role, and it's so much fun with watching those two. And then Sadie Reese is just been great as the boy who comes in and dashes the hopes the first day, and does he or doesn't he the second day. But everybody's been doing a great job.
Absurd of me not to have mentioned when I was just waiting for Godot.
Yes.
He's playing. It's Thursday, November the 21st. Saturday, November the 23rd at 7:30, Sunday, November 24th at 2, and Monday, November 25th at 7:30, and it's in the round in the Lab Theater.
Which is a black box theater, which must be fascinating to be doing this in.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Yeah. Especially with that kind of detail and intimacy, in a sense.
Oh, and to take on the challenge of putting into the round on top of it also. So we have a very specific style, a challenge of a language play, and then now audiences everywhere, and you always have to be aware that somebody's got your back if you're too long in one spot and not positioned right. And what's that been like for you, Sarah?
Oh, what a joy. it's really great. It's really great. I kind of enjoy the feeling of being under a microscope, which
it is
kind of what the round tends to do. And I lost my train of thought.
Well, and I find it freeing as an actor because it's more like I just get to be a person. Right. Because it's kind of almost more like you're on film and somebody's always looking at where you're at, and you don't have to be worried about, am I turned to the right position for downstage? I more just have to make sure I don't stand in the same place for too long without at least shifting to open my body up, which frees you up to have a lot more humanity as an actor.
I don't know if you asked this question, Kate, but I'm interested in, is there any affectations in being female playing male roles?
No,
I don't think so.
No, it's gender neutral.
In that sense, my question, though, would be, I think it's interesting, given that he was so, and I'm sure he could be a strong-willed person, so dead set about this being written for men. It was written for men, and he wanted men playing it. But they're strong and powerful characters, and I suspect that meant men to him, and that's a whole other conversation. Do you, as an actor, a female actor, though, find it a gift to get to play a part that isn't that just is a person, that doesn't have the overlay of whether you're supposed to be playing it girlishly or what it means to be doing it femalely or whatever?
Oh, yeah, 1,000%. 1,000%. This is one of those great plays that, you know, people talk about forever. And, you know, when you're a female student, you think, well, okay, whatever, I'm never going to get the opportunity to do that. So to have that is fantastic. And I 100% agree that they're just people. And we had talked about the other day in rehearsal, you know, the biggest giveaway that even says that they're men is they discuss venereal diseases. And it's and I had said to Chris and my castmates, and it's like, well, everybody gets the clap. So, you know.
It's equal opportunity.
Exactly.
It was interesting. One of his quotes, one of Beckett's quotes was, dance later, dance now, think later. Because that's the natural order of things. So I think that that's, in a way, explaining what the piece is about.
It's about so many things. I think it's interesting. I wanted to ask why, I know as you guys talk about a season, plan a season, why this play now? Or is it just serendipity?
I wish I could say, Kate, that it was a very conscious, thought-out decision that wasn't more than serendipity. although the challenge... After it was, really, Bill and I, as we were talking about the season, it came down to he was getting the rights for Amadeus, and with a limited casting pool, we had already been talking about doing Godot, and with the limited casting pool, I wasn't going to have any men to play from, so it would have to be all women. I thought that was an awesome idea. Okay, let's go for it, and we were able to play, we were able to go from there, and it's been a great challenge to tackle and a great intellectual challenge for. Okay. Here are these hurdles, and here's the history, and why, and okay, how do we just make, how do we get to the show without taking away from the meaning of the story by trying to layer too much extra onto it in that way, has been an interesting challenge, and not actually a challenge, because the actors have just gone after their characters and done the job.
They have gotten absurd, have they not? Incidentally, I want to mention Northampton Community College Theater Department's other plays that they've already done was Amadeus. Here is Waiting for Godot coming up Thursday, November 21st. Lombardi, which I understand you're starring in, Chris.
I'm really excited to get to the chance to take on Vince Lombardi in Lombardi, with directed by Bill Muenemer in the spring.
Great.
And
that's Thursday, February 13th. It opens the 1939 classic by Lillian Hellman, The Little Foxes. And then the first musical by Pasek and Paul in April. So, yes, thank you. Thank you very much for everything that you were doing at Northampton Community College. Please forgive me, Northampton. And at Pennsylvania Playhouse and all the other places.
Touchstone.
Thank you for this work, and thank you for bringing us Samuel Beckett.
And Sarah, thank you for taking on such an exciting and challenging part.
Absolutely.
Special thanks to you for having us on. Sorry.
Oh,
special
thank you so
thanks
much.
To Steve Aronson, our technical engineer, who has managed to restrain himself from becoming more absurdist as he maintains this broadcast more rationally performed as expected. What does that mean? What does that mean? Thanks, Uncle Stevie.
You're welcome.